Hello and welcome to the Pew Football Podcast with me, Guillem Balaguer. I'm in such a rush to get this podcast out that I'm recording the intro on my phone, sat on a delayed plane, with people talking around me and the noise of the plane engine in the background. And I'm not shouting too much, not to disturb other passengers. Not the greatest of qualities, but if you stick around, you will see why it is worth it. I gave the podcast that name, the Pure Football Podcast, with the hope that was not always about football and that it was never purely just a normal podcast. And today I have the possibility of contradicting the name of the podcast. Because what you're about to hear is not only one of the best moments of my career, but also have nothing to do with football. But it is very worthwhile. The Aspire Academy Global Summit asked me to interview in Rome, just a few days back, two top athletes for the evening gala. And I chatted to two extraordinary human beings with the most wonderful story. The high jumpers, Mutaz Barshim and Gianmarco Tamberi, who shared the gold medal in the Olympic Games in Tokyo. But why? What was behind that gesture of friendship, values and generosity? It never happened before in the Olympics, and it became one of the most iconic moments in the history of any sport. Or was it fear of losing the gold that pushed them to do it? You need to hear one of the most extraordinary stories I've ever heard in sport to understand it all. This is my conversation with Mutaz and Gianmarco.
Please welcome on stage Mutaz Barshim and Gianmarco Tamberi. But before we get there, we need to go into this little journey that I promised. And you have to take us to your childhood home, where you spent your childhood. And you're going to get us out of the house and walk around. Take us around your district, the people you were with, who was outside.
So let me start. Let me take you to my childhood and the house that I grew up in. To be honest, I grew up in a normal family. Nothing out of the ordinary. My father used to be an athlete, so sport was running in the blood of all our family members. And one thing that I remember in particular, that in the neighborhood, my father used to be like the hero because he used to be always on TV. So whenever I go out and play with the kids, you know, in the streets or playing football or whatever, I was always special, treated special because my father was in the newspaper or my father was in the television. So I wanted to be like him. It felt like always something that's very special, and I really wanted to be like him. So I start in a young age, going with him to the stadiums, going with him to the track. I always want to hang out, you know, just like next to him to get some of the shine that he had. And this is something I remember, like the beginning of, see, the passion or the first step of sport in the household that I grew up in.
And in your case, wow, in your little village?
I didn't know this story. I didn't know about your father.
You don't know about me.
Yeah. So
that's a good story.
Yeah, pretty the same because my father was a sportman too. He was I was an athlete at the Olympic Games in Moscow. He was an high jumper. Was an high jumper too, your father?
No, he was a distance.
Okay.
Still, athletics.
So almost the same. We were always playing with my friends when I was younger, and my father was the one in the newspaper, the one everybody knows. And of course, that gives me that, that want to be the same or better. So, you know, it gives you the hunger to arrive somewhere. It's something that you have inside.
Okay, so you come out of your house and the world is very, very big. And of course, you're already telling me that the person that's holding your hand, sporting-wise at least, is in both cases your dad. Yes. Athletes, people that, of course, to get to be an athlete, you have to do a lot of things next to that, which you saw close up. You saw the training, you saw the nutrition that he was consuming, you saw the work that he was putting in for what he was doing. You saw that close up.
Definitely have some that, of course, as you said, in my case, in our case, the father was the one that out there in a spotlight. And I've seen, let's say, two different parts. Like the guy that, let's say, people look up to, the sport person, the go out there, the performer. But of course, when he come back home, he need to be the dad to us. And he need to think of the school, what we're doing. And at the same time, what he going through a lot, you know, as a sport person, there's a lot of things that I start to understand right now at this moment. And to be honest, I don't think my father would have been where he is now if it was for my mother, because my father used to be traveling all the time, just like what I'm doing right now. So my father, my mother is the one that always holding the house down, you know, taking care of us most of the time. And being there for my father, you know, once everything, when the spotlight is faded, or, you know, when he came back home, he still want to feel like he's a normal person. He still want to feel like there's some different life, there's different environment. There's a place that I can come up to and settle down and recharge and reinvest myself to go out there again and perform. So I've witnessed that, I would say, in a very early ages, but I did not really understand it until I started doing similar or living similar life as my father. Then I understood how important is having the backup, not just, okay, it's like a one-man job, but or a single sport, but it's a lot going on that you need to make sure that you always can continue.
Those are the invisible lessons, Andy, that you learn later on. But you perhaps applying consciously to your own careers, you were also surrounded by an athlete dad. Was it the same experience as Mutaz, in that he was absent and mom would have to look after you as well?
For me, it's a bit different, because when I was younger, my father he stopped his career very early, so he wasn't an athlete anymore, so he was at home. He was working, of course, so with my mother. They both working, and they both were taking care about me. So I would say the biggest lesson of sport I took from my brother, because he was a javelin thrower, he was a professional athlete too, and he's a bit older than me. So he started to do the sport a bit earlier than me, and I was looking at him like somebody to challenge, somebody that I want to beat. I want to beat the first in the family, you know. So I was looking at him, and I remember he was doing everything very with the mind, everything. Every day he woke up in the morning for the training and the healthy food and all these things. And I was saying myself, why is him doing this? But then I understood how much is important when you have a goal, to do whatever you can to reach the goal. And yeah, I would say my brother was my identity when I was younger.
No wonder you two ended up being legends of the sport. You're surrounded by competition around you, by people that are doing the right things. In your case, perhaps your dad was the one you wanted to impress. In your case, it's your brother who you wanted to impress. But you also had five brothers and one sister, that are right, and they're all very sporty. So what was it like, competition like in the games you played?
As you say, like, you know, I have one older brothers, three younger and one sister. I mean, competition was always, it's the good, bad things in our family. We always compete about everything, whether it's like, who's gonna go to the car, who wanna go there first, you know, who's going to, let's say we go out to visit somebody, or who's gonna get there first. Mine is better, I'm faster, I'm stronger. Oh, so even if we play video games, like, so it's, I would say it's something that just been there always. I don't know why, but I think it's what made me, or what paved the way at the beginning to be a competitive athlete. Because of course, there's a lot of people that do the sport, but they don't have that passion, the competitiveness in them. But for me, I always had that. Even though I wasn't always a good athlete, I think I started to be a good athlete when I was like 17 years old or so. But I always have that fire in me, that hunger that started really, really early. I'm always competitive. I always want to be better. I can go today, do some like train or trying to improve myself. Let's say I'm not happy with the result. I know that I will always come back, because I always have something that kept me going. That fire is never fade. And I think that's something I'm really glad for. And still to this day, to be honest.
We've seen little clues of what took you to Tokyo in that moment, of course. In your case, Gianmarco, you remember the first time that you actually beat your brother at anything?
Oh, that's a big question. As he said, we were challenging each other in the every single thing. So no, honestly, I never beat him. Yeah, I did, but I don't remember the first thing I beat him in what it was. He did another sport because it was a javelin thrower, not a high jumper. But I really remember every single time I was competing in the beginning of my career when I was 17, 18 years old. He was like a big sportsman in Italy. Like he was much better than me in his own sport. And I remember while I was competing, the speaker always say, "Now Gianmarco Tamberi, the brother of Gianluca, who yesterday threw, he's an amazing athlete." I said, "Well, come on, I'm jumping."
The brother off.
And I have to show them who I am. I remember this thing, like it pushed me every single time a lot. So I need to thank him a lot for this.
You both met competing. And I guess at that point that you met, did you have the intuition that your sport was a lonesome sport? One, you were going to travel on your own most of the time, you were going to be on your own. And perhaps it was a good idea, consciously or unconsciously, to create relationships with the people that you were competing against. Did you feel that? And how did you two met? And
Do you remember?
I remember very well, man. It was 2010. You can say the location if you want. So
yeah,
we can...
It was in Canada, 2010, at the
Moncton.
The World Juniors Championship.
Yeah, I mean, he was already a celebrity, honestly. Yeah, he was the... you were. He was the number one in the ranking in the World Junior Championship. And I remember we met like probably three, four days before the competition. I go through him and I say... Yeah. Man, what did I say?
I remember it very well because I was walking with a colleague of mine, you know, from the accommodation to the food court, you know, trying to get some lunch. And he just woke up to me. "Oh, man, you're crazy. How are you?" And he jumped. I'm like, "Who is this crazy guy?" Like, "Okay, thank you. Oh, I like your jump." I'm like, "Okay, thank you. Thank you very much." And then I tell my friends, "This guy is very passionate. He's crazy." It's like, "Yeah, he's very passionate." I'm like, "Yeah." And that was the first impression of meeting this guy. Two or three days later, we competed against each other. And the first time we competed against each other. And do you remember? I don't remember what happened next.
Man, you won the world championship. I didn't even get in the final. Yeah, I don't know how you can't remember. Yeah, I remember.
He didn't want to say it.
He didn't want to say it.
No, he let you say it.
Yeah, I mean, so... that was the first time we met, but not the moment we became friends, I will say, because from there, we start meeting each other many, many times in the competition, and we start to understand that probably we would have shared many moments together. We never supposed that kind of moment, but many, many special moments. So we start to speak together during the competition, to understand how was the other, what was the value of the other. And there were so many things in common, I would say. So many things. We probably are opposite in the track, because if you see each other, if you see us competing, we are totally different way. Chiara always say me, my wife that is here, she always say me, "You have to look at him, he's elegant, he's... you are a disaster." He's like, "Yeah, that's me. You marry me, so..." But the nice thing is that we have so many things in common, like the love we have for our family, the passion we share when we do high jump, the way we are really focusing our goal, the way we want to achieve our goal, and the way we respect rules. And I think I'm really proud to share these moments with such a really nice guy before than a jumper.
Quite clearly, these things that you've got in common is what takes the relationship, the friendship, a long way. But at first, by the sounds of it, by how you're talking here, by the videos I've watched of you, you're completely different personalities. So at the beginning, you must have been like, "I like that crazy guy." And you must have think of him, what? What did you think of Otis? What did you think of?
I thought, in the beginning, he was like a superhero, honestly. Since 2010, when I met him, as a night jumper, he was like, "Wow, I will never get there," honestly. As a human being, you, like, when you speak to somebody that you think, "Wow," and he's like really humble, he's like you, he tried to help you in the competition, you say, "Come on, I mean, he's a nice guy." You know, when you meet somebody...
Not always. But
I mean, you're not helping everybody.
That's so nice.
when you meet somebody that you look at him like he's somebody big, I'm really happy to meet him. And then he's that humble. He helps you during competition to grow. He helps you to understand things, because he's also 1 year older than me. So he's passed through what I passed through 1 year before. Yeah. So he helped me also during my journey. And I was happy to share, like, to have this kind of, how you say, like, somebody to look for that helps you. And it was nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's not, I'll say, not much to say. It's, I understand in a, let's say, in a bit earlier times that, you know, in sports, sometimes things we go through made us who we are. And thanks to my team, I have a great team around me, my coach, you know, my physio, my doctor, my family, my partners, everyone, including, of course, Aspire Academies and everyone that's here and in Doha. It's, you know, I grew up into the mentality of knowing that my biggest driver is myself. Things around me can, I think about it only as an, sometimes it's obstacles or distraction, and other times what I like the more is actually things that make me better, including my competitors. So of course we competed the same competition, but he is not really my target. My target is actually the bar jumping high, which is myself, focusing on myself, trying to beat myself. And all the thing that's around it is only a bonus, you know. I want to have everyone competing. I want to feel the rush. I want to feel the adrenaline. I want to be there. So with that mentality, with that mindset, I just knew we need to use the sports side, the humanity side, that to elevate each other. Because I know, and as he said, we have so much in common. We analyze the sport, you know. We have the same passion. We have the fight. We're driven. So me helping my friend, or he helping me to take it to the next level, it's actually benefiting both of us. So with that mindset, I believe that we both can go to higher places and we still keep that competitive between us, because he is greedy, I'm greedy. We always want more, better. But I think the best way to do that is focusing ourselves, but at the same time elevate, you know, each other.
And by hearing you both talk, you changed the perception of what competing is. And quite clearly, it makes us understand even better that moment. But we're not there yet, because before that moment, I think there was something that there's a lot of elite athletes and coaches here and players that have gone through injury and the difficulties that that means for your head, for your body. And you both did, separated by 2 years, is that right, 2016, 2018, and you help each other in that process. Let's start with you. How did Mutaz help you at that point, at that low point, when you were at the best?
So 2016, July 2016, 1 month to the Olympic Games in Rio, last competition before the Olympics. It was the Diamond League. I was in a crazy shape. Trust me, the best shape ever. I'm still searching for that shape. I won the competition with 239. All the best athletes were there, Mutaz, of course, and everybody that jumped in the final were there. And after 239, was the national record, my personal best, still my personal best, trying to attempt 241. Something happened. Like, I remember my ankle twist inside, and I immediately understand that was really bad, and I didn't have the chance to compete in the Olympics. But all in the sudden, you feel like in the best moment of your life, and then in the hell, like you're done, finish all your dream, everything you work for, it's finished. Just 30 days before the Olympics, and it was really, really difficult to go through it. And I thanks my wife as always, because she was close to me, and she helped me to wake up the morning with the cry in my eyes every day. And then after a while, after 1 year of working and surgeries, because I did two surgery of belief, I remember I did my first competition. So after 1 year, you decide to go back, to try again. You want to challenge yourself. You have a goal. You can do it again. You go out there. It was Paris 2017. Diamond League. First Diamond League. I was really excited to compete, because after 1 year of physiotherapy, surgery, crying and everything. I remember I was really, really like, you know, you feel the energy. I need to compete. I need to challenge myself to see where I am. I went out there, all my opponents were there and trying to, like, you know, they were happy to see me because I was back after 1 year. And I remember they were clapping to me and everything. First attempt, 215, first height, miss. Second height, miss. Third attempt, miss. So 3 weeks, and I get home without any good attempt, and was like terrible, trust me, because you look, it's like you believe that something is possible, but then you look yourself in the mirror and you see just no way, it's just your dream, there is no chance to get it. I remember I get back in the hotel, I close the door, I start crying in the bed alone. I didn't want to talk to anybody. My father was trying to text me to say me, hey, we have the flight tomorrow, please answer me. He was knocking my door. I didn't answer anybody. I didn't answer my wife, my mother. At one time, I remember this guy came to my door. He knocked. I didn't answer. He knocked. I didn't answer. He said, hey, man, I know you're there. I'm Mutatz. I said, man, please go away. I don't want to talk. I say, let me in. Just 1 second. So I tried to take my strength and open the door, even if I didn't want to open the door. I just wanted to stay by myself. But I knew that he could help me. He was like a friend who came there to give you the hand, the shoulder, or whatever. I opened the door and we started speaking for a while, like 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes, 1 hour. I don't remember. Maybe it was 4 hours. I don't really remember. But I know what he told me, but honestly, right now, it's not what the important thing. The important thing of this story is that he came and he knocked my door. He just came there to me to help me. And that's just wonderful, honestly.
Wow. This story is definitely a key scene of the Hollywood movie of your life stories. It's a key scene. But a year later, you get the same injury. How did Gianmarco help you at that point?
Yes. Well, let me start first of saying that as a professional athlete, you know, I understand that injuries is a big part of what we're doing. And if I'm going to challenge myself, if I want to push myself to the extreme, I will never know when is the limit if I didn't push myself to the limit. So with that, I'm well aware of the risk, but of course, none of us is really prepared for that. Even though you might talk about it or something, but you're not really actually prepared until you find yourself in that dark place. Same thing, my story, 2018, feeling great, great shape, great year, winning everything. Came back from 2017, was amazing year, didn't lose a single competition. Was very excited, talked to my coach, this year I'm going for world records. I want to, push myself to the extreme, push myself to the limit. And I feel like I'm at the right place, like physically and mentally, like ready for that. It was in Hungary, and like, I think it was June, yeah, in Hungary in June. And I jumped 240, that competition. I felt great. And to be honest, it felt so effortless. Meeting record, winning the competition, world lead. That's it. I look at my coach and you know what? I think I'm ready. I'm going to raise the bar to 246, which is the world record. And at my first attempt, it felt so close. And
I guarantee you it was.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. It was so close that I almost shocked myself because I didn't even give it 100%. And I know I'm like, wow, the next one, I'm definitely going to clear that. So I was so in a mental state, like I was so up there and I was so in a tunnel vision, so focused, looking at my coach, giving me like advices, what to do, what not to do. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going for it. The stadium was quiet, clapping and preparing myself. The first step, second step, three steps, running the curve toward the takeoff. I remember planting my foot so hard and it's the same thing. The only thing I hear is just like clicking. And the pain was, it was a very strong pain, like unbelievably. I never felt that before. So, and it was almost like I got like a electric shock. I didn't know what it was, but I thought to myself, I definitely broke some bone. I definitely did something that's really, really bad. Fell down on the high jump mat, looked down at my foot, it was swollen, it was blue. The pain was, unbearable. They had to take me up, brush me inside, see my physio and everyone that rushing. My teammate, Jamar, definitely was there. And they took me inside. My physio took my foot, trying to see the stability, if there is something holding my ankle. And he looked at me and he said, "This is not good. This is not good. You have no ligament left." So I broke both of my ligaments, left side, right side. It was absolutely no support. They had to flow me back rushly. I was to Germany. And then when I come, I remember coming to the professor's room. He looked at me. He's like, "You need to do surgery now." I'm like, "Give me a chance. I need to talk to someone." He took my phone. He said, "No. The more time you gotta keep it, it's gonna be very, very bad for you." And I'm not talking bad like coming back to jail. I'm talking bad like having problem walking. So imagine that kind of the feeling, you know, as he said, like at one moment you're the best, you're the top of the world. A few moments later, you're in a wheelchair. You don't know if you ever gonna have a chance to do what you do best. Is that it? My career was over. What's plan B, C, D, something? So you're feeling so depressed in a way. You're so down, a dark hole is, and you just feel like the world is shut down on you. I don't want to go into too much boring details, but it's being in that kind of place. Sometimes you need someone that been through these kind of things to make you understand or to feel like a kind of hope. Of course, I have my family and everyone that really, really as close to me. As I say again, I give so much props to my team because I really have a great team that were there for me rather than just caring about the performance. Like, we don't care about anything. We care about you. We want you to get well. We want you to be 100%. And I remember talking to Gianmarco constantly. I know when I wake up from the surgery, find some few messages from you. And he's like, I know, you probably don't want to talk. I know what you've been through. Please talk to me. I've been there. I want to be there for you. And I want you to feel like it's a thing that you're not in it alone. With that comes, of course, the part that we're not only athletes, we're not only like brothers, but also this is real life. For me, like, it's real life. Sports sides away, it's a real life situation. As I see it, like it's something that affects my personal life, and to having someone there that really care about me deeply and trying to talk me mentally to get me out of that dark hole, it mean a lot to me. And yeah, and he was there.
Yeah. That's another key scene on that movie that we need to talk about. It has to be done. Let's jump to happier times. Let's go to Tokyo. Let's put the context of it. The temperature, the humidity, not the fan, the fact that there were no fans. Just tell us about competing. That you at that point, you both competing for gold, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Tokyo. Wow, Tokyo. For me, it's been like the most difficult journey ever to reach that Olympic game, because you say we passed through the nice moment. But you can't miss that 5 years, because it's been very long, that 5 years. I missed the Olympic in Rio. It was 2016 that I was waiting until the Olympics in 2020. That COVID say, no way, you have to wait another year. So 2021.
In fact, Gianmarco, you took with you a memento of those years, no?
Yeah.
To remind you of it. What was it?
Yeah, my cast. Yeah.
Yeah. You traveled with it?
Yeah, of course I did. It was there in my living room since the surgery. For 5 years, I had my cast writing Road to Tokyo 2020. And it was just to remind me where I started from and where I want to, where was my goal. So I took the cast with me in Tokyo, and I took in the truck. Is it there? No, it's not there.
You still got it?
Yeah, of course I do. It's close to the medal. And so when I enter to the stadium, I just say myself, don't focus on the people that is not there, because I know that how much we feel the crowd, how much they help us. And if you, even for a moment, look at them, look at the seats, empty seats, you will be destroyed. So try to feel there as the stadium is full. Try to live the moment, try to feel, to breathe as everything is perfect. And that's what I did. I remember the first step inside the stadium. You have like that much pressure in that moment because you're building this moment since so long. And so you really feel the pressure. You know how much important is that day. But I remember as soon as I stepped into the stadium, I start smiling like a baby. I say, wow, I mean, I did it. I'm here. I will try to reach my goal again, the one that I couldn't in Rio. And I remember really, I was really proud of myself that for what I did in those 5 years, to never give up in the difficult moments, to trust the process, to reach that goal. In that day, it was like the dream of the life, and everything was perfect. I really remember everything was perfect.
But it was humid and it was hot and there were no fans and they were and
was hot. I don't remember that crazy hot.
To be honest, we didn't care.
Yeah, I didn't care, really. It was perfect temperature, perfect humidity.
I thought you couldn't cover yourself. It was all but anyway.
It's like this, as you said, you know, as an Olympic athlete, you kind of programmed every 4 years. Since 2016, in our heads, like 2020, 2020, 2020, then finally 2020 comes and you're like, oh no, is this going to happen? It's not. I've been working for so long. We prepare. We're so ready. I'm starving. I'm on a diet. I can't eat. So, and then you're just waiting, anticipating for the final decision. I remember I was in a grocery store with my wife, passing that candy and all the chips and all the stuff that I like.
Stop, true. Say.
No, I passed. I passed. I'm like, after the Olympics, as soon as I make it through the other aisle, I got the text, the confirmation text from my manager, the Olympics is postponed for one more year. I came right back to that aisle. That's true story. I came right back, stuffed the trolley with as much crap I can get. Look at my wife like, what am I gonna do now? So what is the plan?
You know,
that's for sure. But what's the plan? What's next? Like, how can we cope? Is it ever gonna happen? And then we start to hear in that, oh, you know what? It might just be canceled. So we didn't really know what to do in terms of preparation, like how I'm gonna prepare my training schedule. Shall I take a vacation, train again, or shall I continue training? Maybe they will change their mind all of a sudden. And when the decision finally came that, okay, actually it's going to happen 1 year later, as he said, we, of course, there's a lot of stuff. They say like it was maybe a little bit humid or so. The fact that there is no spectator in the stadium, something that we both love, you know, to feel like competing in a stadium, full stadium, to feel the adrenaline rush and everything. But we really couldn't care less. So we could not believe that we actually at the Olympics, we did not see anything negative. We were so hyped, like athlete ourselves, we were hyping ourselves that, hey, this is actually happening. We are here, we're the Olympics, we're trying to make the best out of it. And if something is one, if there's one thing that we learned from the pandemic, that we cannot take anything for granted, you know? So us being there, it's a blessing. Let's make the best out of it. I couldn't care less if it was raining, if it was a storm, if I'm here, I'm at the Olympics, I'm about to perform. I have 1.5 years of training on my back. It's about to come out today. So I said, I was very happy. I think not only me and you, I think everyone. And we wanted just to make it there and to make history.
Okay, we reached the last station of this little trip. And this is where I disappear. And please, you two, just take us there.
Yeah, we can try. Call the club. No, I'm joking. So I think we can start from the competition. I remember was the before the presentation, they took us out of the stadium, and I remember all the athletes were together, and me and him, we were apart. We started speaking, and we were asking each other, can you imagine we are really here? It's gonna happen, like the best moment of the last 5 years is gonna happen. And we were so high, we were trying to like hype each other. That's crazy because you never do it with your opponents, honestly. If you have somebody to beat, you will never say something that can help him. But we were doing it. Like, I was hyping him, he was hyping me. And there is no sense. Just the sense is that two friends were going to participate to the best event in the sports in the last 5 years. And we're trying like to live as the best moment of their lives. So that's what we have done during the whole competition. And it was like a punch back. He jumped to 219 in the first attempt. I know he was the man to beat because, I mean, Mutatsi is always the man to beat. So like you can be like 30 people, he is the man to beat. And he was jumping before me. I remember very well. And he was jumping every single jump at the first attempt. I say, come on. He will miss. At one point, he will miss. It's impossible. And it was every single jump, jumping like this, 219, 224, 228. I said, come on, I can't miss. 230, 233 at first. Whoa, man, this guy is not joking today. And then 235, his turn. I say, come on, he can't do it at the first attempt. He will miss at some point. 235 at first attempt. I say, come on, man, please. And I don't know how I was finding some kind of confidence inside me. I was following him and jumping every single attempt as he done at the first attempt. And then 237 came. I mean, for him, 237 is a night. For me, it's something like a wall, you know. I mean, he jumped over 237, I don't know, 1,000 times probably.
1,001.
For me, I jumped over 237 like probably 3 times in my career. So it was his turn, 237, first attempt. I was there, focus on myself. Of course, I never pray in my life or desire the other to miss the attempt. So when he was jumping, probably I wasn't watching at him because I was focused on myself, but I never pray him to miss the attempt. Of course, when he did it, I said, come on, Mutat, please. But then it came to me, and I remember very well at 237, I look at the bar, and I didn't clear that bar since I got that injury in 2016. So the last time, it was 2021, the last time I cleared that bar, it was 2016. 5 years for a dream. But it was my moment. I don't know why. I was feeling like unbeatable. I was feeling like, you know, when you do everything for that, every single thing you can do, you did it. So you will achieve your goal. There is no other option. You will achieve that goal. And I was so confident that was my day. And yeah, magic happened. And I clear as he did 237. I was, wow, amazing. And then I'm sorry, because I started talking and you finished the story.
That was wonderful.
You finished the story.
I'm enjoying as well, so you don't have to worry about it.
You didn't remember the story. And you go on with the story.
No. It's just as you said it, you know. It's to me, as I mentioned before earlier, coming from that surgery, you know, sitting out there, not knowing my future, I don't know what's going to happen next. If God's going to give me one more chance here, I'm going to do it differently. I'm going to enjoy a little bit. I feel like I was going so hard through my career. Like, it's like a tunnel vision. Like, what's next? Okay, next record, winning record, which is amazing, which is great, of course, great result. But I felt like I wasn't really enjoying it as much as I should until I got that injury and I'm sitting here with a cast. And I felt like, did I miss out on the joy of doing what I actually love? But then I start to think, if God gave me one more chance, I'm really gonna enjoy, I'm gonna do it differently this time. And fast forward to Tokyo 2020, as Major Mark mentioned, we are so prepared, we are so ready. You know, that's the moment. Coming from 2016, I had silver. I'm like, okay, I want, that was like 2012, my first Olympics, got silver. 2016 got silver, but I never really felt so ready mentally until I actually reached Tokyo. Tokyo, I felt I was so mature. I'm like, this is my moment. I'm not gonna let this go. I know what to do. I'm enough experienced to deal with any circumstances that are gonna happen today, whether it's like my competitors, whether it's the weather, whatever. So I felt like I'm in a good place, and my physical was like around 90%, I would say, which is, in my head, I thought it was more than enough for that day. And as I said, the competition started, we were so focused. Like, we were really, really, really focused, clearing each height from the first attempt, from the beginning to 237. I mean, it's never been done in history with two athletes come to the Olympics, clear each height from the beginning to 237 from the first attempt. So that's by itself is history. You are sitting here. Imagine how many Olympics have been, and you are producing the best performance in Olympic history. So when the bar was 237, I cleared, he cleared, I look left and right, everybody else is done. At that point, I start to get a little bit sentimental, knowing that from where we've been, not only myself, him as well, coming back from that surgery to just be able to do the sport again, it's like a milestone. It feels like nearly impossible to do that against the best high jumpers in the world and beat everyone coming back from where you come from. It's almost like I got a tear in my eyes. Of course, I need to focus. I'm still in the competition, but I could not believe when I'm here from the surgery room to this moment at the Olympics. We're standing here. There's no one else left. And to be honest, that was, for me, the key and the moment that I know I have is not only about me. I had my team with me through this 4 or 5 years away from the family, 24/7, sacrifice just like what I did, put their life on the line to make sure that I'm going to be ready, to make sure that I'm back again, to make sure that I feel good, to make sure that we have the result that we hope to have. And now that I'm finally here, I feel like it's I need to give them that moment. And he did the same. He'd been through everything, the darks, you know, the ups and downs. So I know, I from what I've been through, there is no way in the world I deserve silver. Like, having silver, it will be just like an unacceptable. And as long as I'm thinking that myself, I think that for him as well. So for me, like, sharing that gold, it was a cherry on top. And this is nothing that you can think about or plan, because who knows that you'll make it to this height? Who knows that you will jump and beat everyone else, you know? So when we both reach that and I look and it's him, that's it. The best finishing today is we share that, because he need to reward himself. He need to reward his wife that stand by him side. He need to reward his people, the sacrifice, and I need to do the same for my team. So, and that was the moment that changed everything, to be honest.
My last question would be, so at that moment, looking in hindsight, were the two biggest feelings, I need to share this and I don't want to spoil the other person's joy? Was there...
What's the second?
No, I don't want to spoil the other person's joy. So was it, I want to share, but I don't want his unhappiness either. Was that feelings that were at the top of your mind at that point, or what?
So I remember that moment like it was yesterday. I was still briefing because I was the last to jump and I missed 39. And the judge came. We were like close. If I'm not wrong, before the judge came to us, Yagmutats, and I say him something like, "Man, whatever will finish this competition, I'm proud to share this moment with you." I'm pretty sure I did kind of something like this, because I was really proud. I mean, I'm still proud to have this moment with him. And then the judge came and he started talking about what was the chances. And Mutat say, "Can we have two gold?" That sentence. "Can we have two gold?" That's magic sentence. I woke up like, oh man, this is is that possible? Is that even possible to the Olympics? Because nobody did it before. Yeah. And as soon as the judge, I remember, he say, "Yes, if..." He didn't complete the sentence. He say, "Yes, if..." He turned to me, "History, my friend." And I look at him and say, "Man, come on." We didn't even thought for 1 second to took the other plan. Because, you know, try to imagine you with your best friend in the track, in what you do, sharing the best moment of your life, you and his best moment of his life. Or you have to challenge, so one can live the best moment of his life, the other will cry. What would you do? I mean, you don't even think about it. Honestly, you don't even think, and we didn't think. We just hug each other. We understood. We really did history, and yeah. we did our history and our country history. And if I have to go back, I will. Even if you tell me, I guarantee you will win. I will never do it, never, because sharing with him, it's like the maximum plus of that competition.
It's basically a unique story told uniquely by both of you. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you tonight and to hear all that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.